So wait, before we start, I have a funny thing about today's wine. Mm-hmm. So I go to a wine store downtown when I don't know what to do for pairing a wine. I go and ask everybody at Some Good Wine on 8th Street.
Which is an actual name of a...
That's okay. The wine store, Some Good Wine. And I go in and I was asking the guy about stuff, and he was giving me this talk about the wine that we're going to taste later today. And then at the end, it was really sweet. He was like, I've really been enjoying listening to the podcast. Aww. And it was really, really nice. Aww, it just so made nice. My day.
That's so nice to know that people are listening.
Right?
Sipping on Sondheim while belting a Bordeaux, pairing the best wines and picking the next show. Hear Broadway guests and us acting like loons. This you can find here on Tennis and Tunes. When Ben Bradley cries, when the vine dies, whether June's or moon's, I simply turn to my favorite things, and they are all Tennis and Tunes.
Welcome to Tennis and Tunes. I'm Jessica.
I'm Jimmy. Hi, friends. Hi, moms.
Hi, friends. Hi, moms. I think, Jimmy, that we should explain the Hi Moms for people that might be just joining us.
It might. Yeah, I always worry about that. Yeah.
So, listeners, if you are not our moms, we're saying hi, friends, to you.
Yeah.
If you are our moms.
Because you're friends.
Because you're friends. If you are our moms and we think that you might be the only people listening, that's a shout out to you, moms.
That's a shout out to you, moms. And also a shout out to moms listening who are also not our moms. But moms and also are my friends. You get double.
You get double the friends and the moms.
Yeah.
Jimmy, how was your week?
It's been all right. Yeah. I threw out my back last week.
Like an old man.
Like an old, old man.
Oh.
It was terrible and terrifying, but it was lovely that the next day I didn't have to do anything.
That's nice. So you could just relax.
I just relaxed, and then I finally popped in this DVD that I've been... on my shelf for like months, which is Ben-Hur.
Ooh, that's a good one.
It's a very good one, but it's a very long one. So I never find the time, but I didn't have any more excuses. So I finally popped it in. And honestly, it's very good, but again, it is very long. We could cut like,
a solid 40 minutes of it and be fine.
We could cut a solid 2.5 hours. And be fine. All right. He gets captured. He does the chariot scene. Jesus dies on the cross. The end. Boom. Done. Fix a flick, baby.
Shout out to Fix a Flick.
Shout out to Fix a Flick. How was your week?
It's been really nice. I am really enjoying this weather that we're having today. It is 70 degrees.
It's a beautiful spring day in this winter, February.
Just makes me a happier person.
Yeah.
I was also given a necklace made of Fruit Loops today by the kids that I babysit.
I saw that.
So what can be better than that?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they're
what do you
cuties.
Pair it with? Fashion, not
fashion?
Yeah, why? What do you pair it with, and then what do you pair it with in like, you know, your accessories, your clothing, but then also what wine would you pair it with?
I mean, basically what I'm wearing every day, which is workout clothes. It goes really great with workout clothes.
It goes.
And then wine. Probably a great Moscato.
Okay. Absolutely.
Fruit Loops and Moscato.
Sweet with sweet. Nothing goes better.
Right. Oh. Ooh, yum. Okay, let's get into this.
We are here
talking about Spider-Man the Musical, which I couldn't keep it in any longer because I know you're so excited about it.
I'm so excited. Spider-Man, no colon, turn off the dark is... I'm so excited.
So, friends and moms, Jimmy is a huge comic book nerd.
Hi.
As you probably heard on previous episodes.
On every single episode, I try and like... squeeze a comic book reference in. Sometimes it goes really well, sometimes it doesn't.
So we're gonna let him loose today, you guys.
Yes.
See what happens. But before we do that, we have to introduce our guest. We have to introduce our guest.
He's
very special.
He's super
we're
special.
We're so excited that he's here.
Yeah. He's could he be sensational? Could he be amazing? Should he be superior?
Ooh, look at all these synonyms.
All these adjectives for Spider-Man and
Kevin DeJesus Jones.
Kevin DeJesus Jones.
Kevin DeJesus Jones. Stole that one from me.
Yes. Oh, I love it. Kevin, we're right. so glad that you're here.
I'm so glad to be here, and I hope my mom is listening.
Oh, yes. Shout out to Mom.
Hi, Mom.
So, Kevin, give us a little bit of backstory on you about kind of your journey in musical theater.
Sure. I kind of came to it late. I started doing, I did some theater in high school. Not really, you know, like in school, not really much before that. And then I didn't really plan to go to college for it. I went to school and spent one semester at the University of Miami as an engineering major. and I always knew that I wanted to have theater in my life and performing. I just really liked performing. I wanted to keep it going somehow. I didn't really know to what capacity yet. But I also was like good at math and science and I'm also kind of a huge nerd. So I was like, engineering, it works. So I went into it and it wasn't so much that the schoolwork was too hard. I could manage that. But I also, just happened to meet the head of the theater department there because he was, at the time, the resident director of my freshman dorm. Nice. So he was basically the guy who would get a call in the middle of the night like, hey, we gotta go pick up this freshman who drank himself into a stupor and is at the hospital. That was his job, in addition to being the head of the theater department. Real busy guy. So I met him and he suggested that I audition for the shows, so I did, and I got one. And it was I was having such an amazing time. I was doing this show at night. And then, you know, meeting all these awesome people that they were like-minded individuals and I was having a great time with them. And then during the day, I was, you know, doing my engineering classwork and I didn't really like any, I just didn't like the people. I didn't really, you know, they had us in these, study groups. I didn't really like anyone in my study group. I didn't really like get along with my peer advisor. I didn't really get along with my student advisor. And then of course that, you know, then I would be done with that for the day and go rehearse for the show and have an amazing time. And I thought something needs to change. So.
Right.
So I called my parents and they were amazingly supportive they honestly, they were like, I was kind of surprised to hear you were going into engineering. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I switched theater.
Twist.
Right?
Yeah, I know. It's a huge, yeah, definitely. You know, I say that to people and they go, that's a big switch. And I go, well, yeah.
This isn't the son I wanted to have. math and science son.
Yeah, no, that was fortunately not the answer I had, even though my dad is also an engineer. But it's fine. I still do some kind of engineer-y stuff.
Right.
It's sort of another I'm trying to make it a supplement to my side jobs. But we're not here to talk about that.
That's in our other podcast.
All of our other podcasts.
Side jobs.
That's the boring stuff. That's how the sausage is made. We just want to have some delicious sausage.
How the sausage is made when we pair it with sausages.
And wine.
Yes. And a nice dry Riesling.
Right. yes.
What was the show that you did, that first show? Do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely. It was Pterodactyls by Nikki Silver.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know that either.
Oh man, it's such a good show. And I'll tell you what, it's an AIDS play, actually, essentially. Uh-huh. So it's this family and there's a son who is sort of estranged and it turns out he has AIDS, and then there's the daughter who is engaged to this guy who is also closeted gay, and then he sleeps with the son, and so he's got it, and now it's this whole big kind of family drama. But it's really mostly about denial in upper middle class white families. And so him building this T-Rex skeleton that he like found the bones in their backyard, it sort of becomes like the T-Rex in the room rather than like the elephant in the room. It's just this big thing that no one talks about. And it's so clever. Nikki Silver is such a clever writer. Just everything is so, it's really funny, mm-hmm. really dark. And I had, this was my first show in college. I had just come from doing theater in high school, Catholic high school, mind you, where on the first day of rehearsal every day, our campus minister would come and like censor the show. She would say like, nope, can't say that. Nope, can't say that. And we're talking like really safe, golden age musical sexual comedy. Like in Anything Goes, when they make a joke about, he's got to teach me the finer points of stoking. Like, we can't say that.
Oh no. You
know, so ridiculous.
Oh no.
So basically we would just go do that. So it was a real.
You get a kick from soda pop, not from champagne.
Exactly. yeah. Everybody dances 5 feet apart.
Yep.
So yeah, it was
a
really
few things go, not anything. A few, yeah, things. A few carefully regulated
things go. Not on Sundays. So it was a really refreshing change.
Yeah.
to do a show about AIDS and to prance around the stage in a French maid costume.
Ooh,
love it.
Even better.
Absolutely, it was really great. I had an awesome time.
So you graduated from University of Miami, mm-hmm, with a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Theater?
Bachelor of Arts in Theater.
Cool. Yes. Cool.
Yeah. More of a general theater education.
And somewhere in there, you and I did Pirates of Penzance together.
Yeah, that actually was after I graduated. So I didn't start working at CR. No, is that true? Yeah, see, the first time I worked at Connecticut Repertory Theater was the summer after I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
That summer I did My Fair Lady and Guys and Dolls.
Right.
And then the following summer was when you and I were together. We did Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah.
And, oh dear, what was the other one we did?
Were you in Man of La Mancha?
Yeah, in Man of La Mancha, yeah. Yep. And then I worked there one more summer,
right,
when we did Music Man and Drowsy Chaperone. And I got to play Robert. And it was, ooh, a good, great time. But, yeah.
And I am a former Janet, so this is perfect.
Oh my goodness. I love it. And I like the show.
I actually just saw the real Robert.
Oh yeah.
The other day at City Center.
Awesome.
I went and saw Hey Look Me Over, which was fabulous.
It was so good.
It was so good. And it was so cool to see Robert Martin being the MC and being the man in chair in a different setting.
Yeah.
But it was like the Drowsy Chaperone. It was seriously like that character got famous,
mm-hmm,
and went from his living room to doing it for real. Okay, so CRT, and then what happened?
So then, almost immediately after that third summer, actually, it was when I did Spider-Man. So it was bizarre because I was out of town. I was in Florida, and so I couldn't go to the audition. And I got back in town and my agent called and said, you know, we know you couldn't go to the initial call, but I spoke to the casting agent because he knew I had a big, heavy gymnastics background, which I did not mention at all earlier. surprise. So he knew that I had a heavy gymnastics background. I did it for like 8 years growing up. I still tumble. And, you know, he spoke to the casting director and really tried to push for me. And, mm-hmm, you know, she finally acquiesced and brought me in. And there were just six of us there, and the first thing they did was bring us into the theater, strap us into the system, and fly us around the house. So yeah, really like, really, really.
You don't want to hear my 16 bars kind of thing yet?
Yeah, no, that was the first thing they did. So they took the flight. The flight, yeah, they're all called flight. The flight path, I guess, that my eventual track did, like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I played the hero flyer, and I was one of three people in the show who at any point would fly over the audience.
Mm-hmm.
The other one being my friend David, who played another one of the sort of stunt Spider-Men, and the third being Peter Parker,
mm-hmm,
who by the time I joined the show was being played by Justin Sargent. So I was the first one to actually leave the stage and fly over the audience, and so that was the one that they let us through. And it was a good one to pick because it wasn't as hard as the Goblin Battle, which is later in the show, but it also kind of had all of the elements of what made it unique and tricky to be a flyer in that show.
Right.
So we had to start on, the stage left proscenium wall. There was a platform like 15 feet up, I want to say. And so you would fly out from there, sort of go, in line with the front edge of the balconies. There were two balconies. Turn around, swing back, turn around again, fly up, and land on the second balcony.
Wow.
That was part one. And the landing was really, really tricky because, like, just the way you have to kind of get used to the way the cables move you and how you can work with them, but not, like, you're in control, sort of, but you are also, it's a very fine balance of being in control and relinquishing control to this gigantic machine above you. So landing on the platform, on this little platform, then you'd have to turn around, jump off, get level with the first balcony, sort of do this loop around closer to the stage, land on the first balcony, house right. And from there, we had to jump off the balcony, fly back over and land on the stage, which was also kind of a tricky landing. But that was it. So that's just half of that flight.
But just
that was
just
all I had to do.
That's it.
Exactly. So I think really the best indication that I was going to get the job was that, you know, there were these five guys who were like, this is kind of terrifying. I'm going to go for it. And then there's me, you know, former gymnast, adrenaline junkie, loves roller coasters, loves biking in Midtown Manhattan.
Another thing you don't know about me.
yeah, exactly. I was just like, oh, when's it my turn? So by the time I was finally going, I was really excited to do it. So yeah. I think they kind of read that and saw like the big smile on my face, like, I can't believe I'm doing this. so I think that's kind of why I got the job.
That's awesome. And how long were you in the show?
I was in the show. I opened in September, and then the show closed January of the following year. So
cool.
Yeah, September, October. Well, yeah. So really like 4 months I was with
That's
the
company. Awesome.
That's wonderful.
Of those were in performances.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I cannot wait to hear more about that. We got to open this wine, though.
We got to open this wine. All right. You see on my face, when are we going to get to open this wine?
Right.
You know, let me into that.
So I picked a really unique wine because Spider-Man is a really unique show. And you either love it or you hate it mm-hmm. or you don't know what it is. Much like orange wine.
Huh. What?
Yes.
What?
I know. I know. Jimmy is freaking out right now.
I'm freaking out. These are my...
solidly in that third camp.
Yes.
Well, we're going to learn about it all together.
Okay. Musicals, comic books, and the color orange are my three favorite things.
Beautiful. Well, then I'm going to let you be in charge of pouring while I get my notes together. So this is the Mother Rock Liquid Skin.
Didn't we already do a Mother Rock?
No.
What did we do? What rock did we do?
We did it. That was, I believe, from the Canary Islands. Okay. That was a rock.
Oh, yeah. That sounds good.
this is actually from South Africa. From Swartland, which is in the coastal region of South Africa. And this is Chenin Blanc. It's made 100% from the Chenin Blanc grape, which most people associate with Vouvray in France. But we're getting it from South Africa because that's actually where most of Chenin Blanc comes from, which is pretty cool. It's made from a 100% whole bunch fermentation. So that means that they literally go to the vines, pull the whole hunk of grapes, stems and everything, off the vine and ferment it. And it's fermented on the skins for about 9 weeks, and then it goes into oak barrels.
Is that longer than normal?
Well, so basically what is happening is it's a white wine that's being treated like a red wine.
What?
So red wines are fermented with their skins, right? Like that's where it gets its color and its
totally.
Tannin
sure,
and everything
sure.
like that. Uh-huh. But white wines don't do that. Like you take the skin off of white wine because it's white wine and you don't want it to have color, right? So if you leave it with the skin for 9 weeks to ferment, it gains a little bit of color and gives it this orange hue, which looking at it, it's like golden orange.
Yeah. It's a beautiful golden orange.
It's like a sunset.
It's just like a sunset. A beautiful day.
Let's go ahead and smell it.
Okay.
Ooh, like smell that oxidation.
Yeah. It hits you.
Yeah. But also you get like apricot and honey flavors in there.
Uh-huh.
Like exotic fruits, like a little bit of banana in there.
I can see that.
Yeah.
See that.
Okay, let's go ahead and taste this.
All right. Tangy. Ooh. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Like peach flavors, again with those like exotic fruits, but it has like the mm-hmm. tartness and the crispness of like a grapefruit
yeah.
in there.
Mm-hmm. It has a real Guardians of the Galaxy vibe, you know, like just sweet yet little tart.
I love how, and this is something that I like about Chenin Blanc in general, it's kind of a heavier grape, like it has some body to it.
Yeah.
I would not suggest this for like a hot summer day because it's too heavy in my opinion.
No.
But for like a nice end of summer, like going into fall or spring going into summer, I think that that's the perfect time to drink a wine like this. Or if you're in the winter and you want a white wine, like you can't handle the, maybe the,
right,
like having a ton of tannins, like you just don't like that, this is a great alternative. The cool thing is that the soil from this region is decomposed clay and granite. And so I think that you get a lot of that in there too. Like, I don't know. I'm smelling it again.
I can see that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did, yeah, like on the nose especially, I noticed it was kind of, look at me talking about white. On the nose especially, I thought it was like this, I don't know the good word for it. I never know the good word for it.
It's okay.
But
it's better than anything I would say.
The good word for this in particular, like when it's kind of chalky.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I never want to say that because it sounds bad.
Like, but it's, yeah, exactly.
Like if I were sitting in a restaurant and the sommelier were like, this wine is very chalky, I'd go, oh.
Oh, no, thank you.
Right. Well, if somebody said wet rock, would you want it?
But that's oddly enough, a little bit more than that. Like, yeah, actually, which is strange.
Well, again, like a lot of people don't like scotch because it's like, or they're like, it's leathery or it's oily. And like, I love that stuff.
Yeah. In wine, like when you say a red wine is leathery, I'm like, ooh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want it to taste like the inside of my wallet. But yeah, so you know what? I was into scotch for a long time and I've kind of been turned off it lately because I work in restaurants too.
Another thing, guys.
Another thing. Woohoo. Yes, and I was speaking to this bartender because, you know, most of my time working in restaurants I've been bartending. I was talking to this other guy. He was like, oh, I hate scotch. It smells like Band-Aids.
Yeah.
And one day I smelled it. I was like, oh,
it does.
He's right. Like, I don't want to. Now I used to like this.
It's delicious.
And then, yeah. So
it's delicious.
So I think that's just like a little hurdle that will take me a little while to get over.
So
but lately I'm just
good.
Not
all right.
It.
I remember being a kid and picking my scabs and eating it right off.
I love Band-Aids. Now we don't want to drink this wine.
No, thank you. That just like, that makes me think of like swimming pools.
Yeah.
Like, that's like you find that at the bottom of the pool at the YMCA. You're like, get me out. Okay. I don't want to learn to swim that badly. All brown. Thank you.
I never did that, Mom. I never did that.
Yep. So that is our wine for today. Everybody check out the Mother Rock Liquid Skin. I also love the title. I think of like the Spider-Man outfit, like Liquid Skin.
Like, that's a very like,
oh, that's true.
That's a very like nerdy fantasy name.
Right?
Again,
liquid
also
skin?
A huge, yeah, like that's, I don't know. That kind of makes me think of like,
I'm the liquid skin.
Like, yeah, like a liquid, like a stone elemental with like stone skin who also is liquid somehow.
Well, they named it, so Mother Rock is basically because they farm organically and everything is supernatural. They don't add any sulfates directly to the wine except like right at bottling. And so it's made just really, really naturally. And so they want everything to come from Mother Earth, from the rocks, especially this area that has so much rock there, near where the vines are. And then other than that, I'm not sure where Liquid Skin came from, but Mother Rock is like one with the earth.
Cool.
In South Africa.
Liquid Skin.
Yep. So check it out, you guys. You can get this at Some Good Wine downtown on 8th Street, or you can order it basically anywhere online, but check them out because they are super cool and very informative. If you just go to them and you're like, hey, I want the Spider-Man wine, they'll let you know.
Yeah, they're your friendly neighborhood wine store.
They are. But then you can also come and visit me at BTL Harlem on Sundays. I'll be there most Sundays. Okay, let's talk about this musical. So
let's talk about this musical.
Yes, indeed.
So for my mother, who doesn't know what we're talking about, so Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, 2010, music and lyrics by U2's Bono and the Edge.
Okay, Jessica's mom, Spider-Man is a comic book character.
She knows that.
That is not half spider and half man.
She's gotten that far. She did say, what did I say the other day that she wouldn't understand? And she got so upset about it. And she was like, Jessica, I would have gotten that. So at least she's listening. So arrangements and orchestrations by David Campbell, book by Julie Taymor, who we've talked about before on
The Lion King.
Lion King. Yep, that's exactly it. And then Glenn Berger and
the whole show that I'm a part of.
I'm going to mess up his name.
Oh, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa.
Yes.
Who is
the
Thank you very much. I know this because he is the showrunner of Riverdale. He's the showrunner.
Really?
Uh-huh. A little synergy. There's a podcast called Not Your Mother's Archie, in which a woman who loves Archie comics discusses Riverdale with her son. And maybe that's my mom and myself, and catch it every Saturday. So.
And it's great. Hey, Timmy's mom.
Hi, Timmy mom.
And this was, yes, based on the Spider-Man comics. And...
But not really.
Loosely. Let's say loosely.
When you have a character that is a dessert beverage, Swiss Miss.
But this has the Green Goblin.
It does have the Green Goblin.
It does. The quintessential Spider-Man
villain. Yes, exactly.
Swiss Miss, I think, was actually the only original villain for that. Kraven the Hunter and all those other guys there. Mm-hmm. And the Lizard, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all
Carnage and... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was originally directed by Julie Taymor.
Yes.
Great. We all have faith in her. She can do it.
She can do it.
It was going to be awesome. Then, basically, she got fired.
Yeah.
Because things were not going well. Meaning that the show was going into crazy amounts of debt due to all of the flying and set and like these new things that they were trying to do at the Foxwoods Theater. The show was being built for the theater, which just is a lot of money.
Right.
So by early 2009, before the musical had even opened, they were $25 million in debt.
What?
Yeah. So that was kind of crazy. So they decided to, at some point, they fired Julie Taymor and brought in a new creative team. And so the show, and that was after previews, actually. They had started previews. Mm-hmm. Things were, it just wasn't getting good press, and previews had been delayed a lot because things just weren't working out. The creative team and marketing departments hadn't invited the press because they didn't want anybody to write about it yet because it wasn't ready.
Right.
But the press got mad and decided to buy tickets and come anyway and wrote about it.
Uh-oh.
So it got a lot of bad reviews, but people were still really excited about it because it was super new, like all this flying and stunts and amazing things. And so they closed the show for 3.5 weeks, redid it, rewrote it, re-choreographed it. I don't think they wrote any new songs, or like if they did, they just like expanded.
There were like one or two.
One or two new songs?
Little things that they added. Songs, I don't think so, but like one or two little scenes that they added.
Yeah, and I know they changed the ending.
Yes.
And that was a big thing. And it got some more praise from the press once it reopened. But it was still the most expensive Broadway show in history.
Yes. Setting records.
Yeah. All the records.
So I've heard some big news about that new My Fair Lady. All right.
I mean... That flower budget.
That flower budget? Every single show has a new flower, all right?
That's a lot. That adds up.
Do you know that they're bringing in soot actually from England for her face? Every day. Every day, new soot.
Fly it over on private planes.
The weekly production budget for Spider-Man the Musical was $1.3 million.
Oh, my God.
A week. So just for those moms out there.
How much of that was your paycheck?
A nice little chunk of that went for me.
I'll take that. All right.
Something else that we have to talk about before we get into your experience, which I want to hear all about it. The other thing that we have to talk about is ultimately one of the reasons that the show closed was due to the amount of injuries and the repercussions of that. I mean, there were so many cases of like safety codes being checked all the time and making sure that everybody was super safe. And I want to hear your thoughts since you were doing those incredibly dangerous things.
Sure. Well, I have to give a quick disclaimer on my opinions on all this because I joined the show so late that I can certainly start off by saying that I never felt unsafe doing that. And I was, you know, I was doing one of the more publicized tracks. Like, I took over the role that Chris Tierney originated.
Right.
You know, so...
Who was somebody that sustained broken ribs and internal injuries because he fell 20 feet from the air to the stage.
Yeah, his was probably the most publicized injury, and also like people got video of it, so we yeah. right. put it online. And but Chris Tierney, we made the joke about him that he actually was not Spider-Man but Wolverine, because he made a full recovery. He joined the show again, and
oh my
he's
gosh.
Still what? Performing. Yeah, he's awesome. I got to meet him a couple times. He came to closing. Just such an awesome, bright, nice guy. So like, so just, he radiates good energy
yeah.
to be around.
Oh,
him.
Good.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. There were a lot of injuries. But you know, it's tough, because in terms of like the sheer number of them, there
right.
weren't really that many more injuries than a lot of other Broadway shows. Like sort of, an at the time contemporary example was Bring It On, the musical, the,
right.
the cheerleaders. And
yeah.
they had, I think, you know, way more injuries than we did. But, you know, because
we're calling
of,
you out, Lin-Manuel
exactly,
Miranda. calling you out.
So, you know, but I think due to the fact that it was already such a news story, people were already so like clamoring for more information about it.
Right.
Anytime anything went even slightly wrong on that show, the next day in the New York Times, they'd be like, disaster at Spider-Man.
Right.
Isn't that also, like, I remember, like, people would come maybe see that show to maybe, like, witness.
Oh, yeah.
An accident.
That was a huge part of the draw. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, and it's a very big, very complicated show. Even by the time I joined it, they hadn't worked out all the kinks. And you know, there were some things. And of course, like, changing the order of the show, adding new elements. There are things that are always going to be kind of tricky. Everything was,
right.
all the set changes and everything were computerized. The flying system that I was on was computerized. And sometimes computers crash, or sometimes
right.
safety overrides kick in and they have to pause the show. So, you know, they would have to stop things sometimes. And we as the cast would sort of be joking, like, get ready for the story tomorrow. And it's like, disaster with Spider-Man. And then, but the audience, you know.
I'm sure they loved it.
Yeah, exactly. They'd be like, we saw it on a night when something went wrong. Oh, my gosh. but that all kind of depended, because sometimes they would see something go wrong and it was just, you know, a house didn't roll on properly. And then they
right.
would be sitting there for half an hour looking at nothing on the stage and kind of getting bored and antsy. Other times, though, if they had to stop the show while one of us were flying, then, you know, we can sort of interact with them and kind of keep them entertained, because they're,
right.
you know,
yeah.
they're having the experience that some of them are kind of looking for.
When you're dangling
exactly,
over their
yeah.
faces. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, the most.
When's somebody getting injured? When's that happening?
Yeah, I haven't heard any bones.
I've spent $75 for this ticket. I want to see a severe injury. I want somebody hospitalized.
That said, one of the most fun times I had on that show was during that first flight, the same one I did for my audition. I flew out and, well, first let me say this, that when we had to stop the system, you know, we had our flight coach who was on sort of in a little pocket, in like this little nook underneath of one of the proscenium platforms, and he sat there the whole show with a big red button, and anytime something with the flying looked like it was going wrong, he would just hit that button and the system would totally have an emergency shutdown and just come to a complete grinding halt.
Wow.
So of course that happened a couple times in rehearsal while I'm still trying to figure things out that they can, you know, stop me from killing myself.
So
you sort of get familiar with how it feels when the system stops, and it's just sort of this very slow lurch. Like, you don't feel so much like you're suddenly falling, like a plane with turbulence,
right.
but it's more like a whoomph, kind
yeah.
of
yeah,
sensation.
Yeah.
So I knew that feeling very well, just from rehearsals. And there was one night during the show, that first flight, I took off from the stage, and right before my first turn, when I had to start swinging back, I felt that lurch, and I knew something had gone wrong. And so my first thought is like, what did I screw up?
Right.
Did I
right.
do something wrong? And like, did the flight coach have to hit the button? What's the deal? So I sort of, the swing sort of continued, and right around the time when I would have made the turn, I sort mm-hmm. of tried to twist around like I would have, just more out of muscle memory than anything else. And then just sort of swung back the same way I'd been facing, and mm-hmm. like just kept swinging back and forth. So at this point, obviously I know something's wrong. I know that we're going to have to reset the flight. So I just sort of waiting for a cue, because we all had earpieces when we were flying,
right.
waiting for like a cue from my stage management or something. I just, you know, kept swinging back and forth and just thought, just keep trying to look like Spider-Man. Don't like,
right.
don't go limp and like look like you're just an actor
who's stuck
above the stage. Yeah. So, you know, after a few minutes of that,
right.
they turned the lights on and the stage management makes the announcement. Of course, they've already said in my ears, like, Kevin, we got to reset the thing. Just
right.
hold tight. So I start swinging around. They make the announcement, the audience, of course, reacts to that. They laugh, they jeer, they, oh, wow. So they had to reset the system. Once I stopped swinging, they kind of just, they lowered me down. And I was above a small section of the orchestra audience, so they had to, like, clear out this sort of small section of the house. They lowered me down into the seats, unclipped me so they could reset the system. And at this point, like, I just started goofing off. Like,
right.
I start running around. I sat next to this lady. I grabbed her playbill. I started flipping through it, like, not saying anything because, we couldn't say anything
right.
under the masks. But, giving kids high fives, running around, just being a goofball. Which when you can ham it up and sort of keep them with you, that was the kind of stop they really liked. And then, of course. They clip me back in, fly me back up. We go over. We do the flight again. And it goes really well, and they love it even more for having seen the experience.
That's a great story.
Yeah, so that was really cool. Obviously, people who were in the show longer than I did have had experiences like that.
Right.
More.
That sounds awesome, though.
Yeah, I had a great time. I thought it was really fun. you just got to ham it up.
Right. What were some of your favorite songs in the show and just moments that you would get really excited about?
Oh, man. Near the end of the show... there's Boy Falls from the Sky, mm-hmm. which for me in the ensemble, we were doing what we called the labyrinth dance. And that was the only point in the show when more than one person dressed as Spider-Man was on stage at a time.
Whoa.
Peter Parker was in the front. This was the moment of the show where he's sort of, as in every Spider-Man origin story, where he's deciding whether he has to give up his, has to sort of pick which life he wants to lead and deciding whether he's going to be the hero.
All the time.
I know. Flip floppers. Bitten by a radioactive spider, you just accept your fate.
All right, fine.
I'm just gonna be a superhero, whatever. But so he hadn't figured that out yet, and had his moment of deciding to be the hero. So of course, it's this very moving, dramatic moment in the show. And while he's having this awesome song, which I mean, oh man, Dylan Carney and Justin Sargent, they just sang it so well, and they sounded so good on that. They all had these crazy rock and roll sounds. So they're singing they're belting it out, and then we're behind them, nine of us, I think. There were nine of us dressed as Spider-Man, and these huge shifting screens on stage are moving back and forth, and as they move back, they kind of reveal us one row at a time. And we're doing this dance that we're kind of moving in slow motion through these Spider-Man poses, which learning that was boot camp, because we basically get into these poses that are super low lunges and sit there for 10 minutes while the choreographer goes on and says, move that pinky one centimeter that way. Okay, good.
No.
I was the sweatiest human doing those rehearsals. Because I was doing put-in rehearsals. These were just me and the choreographer, one-on-one. I was getting all of his attention. Squat lower. Great. Okay, there you go. Now stay there for 20 minutes. I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. So we were doing this cool dance behind him, and then, it starts getting faster. We do this really cool fast section where we're shooting webs and spinning around and jumping down on the floor and jumping back up and
right.
So that was really awesome.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. That was probably my favorite.
The only song that I am somewhat familiar with is If the World Should End, because of the Tony Awards performance.
Right. Yep.
And it's a beautiful ballad. Mm-hmm. Really, really gorgeous duet.
If there's no tomorrow, I'll have today again. There's no time for sorrow when there's no such thing as time. And if the darkness will descend,
I had a a surprisingly long run for the amount of, like, I guess negative.
Sure.
Commentary, you know, the feedback and everything it had.
That was the 2011 Tony Awards, and it closed January 2014.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that is.
That's a good
it was,
run.
It was a good run. And I think that definitely speaks to the amount of interest people had in it.
Yeah.
And also that there's no such thing as bad press.
True.
Because it got a lot of attention, which at the end of the day just put a lot of butts in the seats.
We're calling you out, J. Jonah Jameson. We're calling you out, Daily Bugle.
Well,
yeah. Which is, you know, people knowing about the show at the end of the day can really never be a bad thing, because someone's going to see an article about someone getting hurt and saying, oh, I want to see that. Yeah. That interests me.
I'm a sociopath.
Yeah.
Was Patrick Page still in the show when you were there?
No. By the time I got into the show, Robert Cuccioli was playing the Green Goblin.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I love listening to Patrick on the cast recording.
Yeah.
I mean, so Patrick Page, I know him best because of Hunchback of Notre Dame.
What?
Actually, he did it.
He played the Green Goblin in Hunchback of Notre Dame?
Yes. Otherwise known as Frollo.
Ah.
You see the connection?
That was good. I thought he snuck that by you for a second. You were going to be like, yeah, the Green Goblin.
Wait. That doesn't make any sense.
I'm the new Coney Island, and all the rides are open and free.
But it was interesting to hear his rock sensibility mm-hmm. in this show.
Mm-hmm.
And then, excuse me, in Hunchback of Notre Dame, so the choral and tall vowels and things like that. It was so cool to hear a musician be able to switch up like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. And hearing Bob do it, he was always like, it's such an interesting part. It sort of sticks out from the rest of the tone of the show. He feels less rocky than a lot of the other stuff. He's got this kind of almost like, I don't even know how to really describe it. It's like he's this like villainous jazz kind of like electro funkiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
That again was kind of less rocky. It was more like it was like this electric carnival of freaks.
Now, cool. I know that you were there late, you know, but did you know why they chose the villains that they chose?
I actually don't.
Because especially like, you know, like this is Jimmy's comic book soap op corner, you know, it was interesting for me to see Carnage without Venom.
Right.
And it was very interesting that he's genetically modifying these people to make these villains. And
he
makes
change the story, like
Kraven the Hunter.
Right. Which actually, that was the one I played. I was Kraven the Hunter too. Yeah, that was a fun time.
Oh, guys, he is friends and moms, and you can't see it right now. He is shirtless, and he is holding a big staff.
Giant lion tattoo on my chest.
Right, exactly.
I left the bullwhip outside.
Oh, man.
Yeah, otherwise I'd crack it for
you. Right. Well, much like the show, this wine is growing on me.
Yeah. Yes.
It is becoming, I maybe think it's because we're leaving it out a little bit longer, but it's having a less oxidized first taste, and I'm starting to get more fruits in it. And I feel like it's kind of with that show too. Like the more that you research and listen, the more you're like, oh, this is really good without all the injuries and the debt and everything. Like that might've been what got people in the seats. But right, I think that once people started enjoying it, it was entertaining.
It's sad that it is a show that will forever be marred by its history.
Yeah, it definitely had a lot of really cool aspirations, and it mm-hmm. wanted to do some really cool stuff. And I think it did a lot of that stuff, but it just unfortunately had a long shadow over it for most of its run.
I'm also interested to see, so I know that Natasha Katz worked on the lighting mm-hmm. for Spider-Man, and she is also doing Frozen.
Oh, awesome.
So I think it'll be interesting, too, to see, like, I don't know. I think that any job will influence the next one, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm interested to see if we'll see some influences from Spider-Man and Frozen.
I got a sneak peek of that.
Yeah.
For no reason. but
he's very famous.
I'm very famous. All right. I have a podcast where I discuss Riverdale with my mom. I'm very famous. There's a really cool projection of like this snowstorm.
You heard it here, folks. Now we're going to get sued by Disney. Thanks, Jimmy. There's nothing. It's going to be dumb.
So dumb. How do you think Disney's not going to sue us for that?
Now that we've got some wine in us, we're going to play games right now.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Thank you. How long?
Here you go. So, we have a trivia game to play today.
All right.
So today's game.
Do you not tell them ahead of time that
they're
a trivia
game? No, I don't
game?
Because I like people to be surprised.
Yeah, they are always surprised, especially when we bust out with this choreography and song.
Oh, good.
That is
true. Oh, yeah, that was surprising. Pleasantly surprising. I enjoyed it.
Thanks. You. We wrote it in an afternoon.
It has now in the beginning and at the end of the tune.
Awesome. So today's game is about Broadway shows that come from comics.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So get ready.
Okay.
So the good news is that Jimmy has, one, not seen these questions. Two, is kind of an expert on this. So we will always give you first try.
Oh, good. Okay.
Because I don't want
good,
him.
Yes, give me a chance to embarrass myself.
Well, only because Jimmy would just like shout out in the middle of the question. So
ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. So no. I will read through a series of clues, and you can choose the best answer.
Should you expand upon the parameters? Right. Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Okay.
You do it.
Okay.
You do. You do. You do you, girl. Okay. Rules are for fools.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. Okay.
Rules are for fools.
You've Got Possibilities is generally considered the show's most memorable tune. The show involves a romantic conflict between the main character and a columnist for the Daily Planet newspaper.
Pass.
Okay.
It's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman.
Yep. Awesome. That is correct.
Possibilities.
Oh, Daily Planet, jeez.
It's okay. That's okay. We got a next one.
You can do this.
Yeah.
I believe in you.
Wrong show.
Oh. Is that
enough? What is it with mild-mannered reporters, huh?
That's true.
What is it with mild-mannered reporters? Also,
I want to see a version of It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman played by you. I want you.
Yeah.
Right now? All right. I'm down.
You can do it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Tell them that you can tumble and that you can fly over the...
Fire the audience.
Exactly. Well, you know, Spider-Man was my favorite superhero growing up, but Superman was my dad's.
There you go.
We used to watch some of the old the George Reeves Superman serials together.
Yes.
That was some good times. Where, like, you know, cartoon Superman is flying through the air and, like, sort of flies behind a ridge and then George Reeves stands up.
Yes, exactly.
Love that. There was one episode of this that I really just, he would point this out every time, and I loved it, and I thought it was so funny. Superman has to go save these guys who are locked in a bank vault. So... Of course, yeah, you know, black and white George Reeves Superman serials, the kind, like, the shows they used to play in between the newsreel and the, like,
three
movies you went to see when you went to the movies for 5 cents. So he flies into the building, you know, there's cartoon Superman flying through the air, and then it immediately cuts to George Reeves, like, jumping in a window, and he, you know, rips this bank vault off the wall and puts it next to the opening and kind of leans it against the wall to talk to these guys who are coming out. And as he's talking to them, you can very clearly see that this is made of something very light, balsa wood, foam, whatever. And it kind of starts to fall towards him.
Uh-oh.
So George Reeves, without missing a beat, just sort of casually puts his hand up and leans against the bank vault to hold it in place as he's talking to these guys. I'm like, this is the take you used.
Yeah.
Like, you had this, like, your option was this or one where, like, George Reeves poked himself in the eye. So, you had to go with this.
So this is the one.
Well, I mean, of course he would poke himself in the eye. He can't see it because it's a lead-lined safe.
He forgot he wasn't wearing his glasses.
And he wasn't wearing his glasses.
Like, darn it, I'm not Clark Kent. I'm Superman. I mean, who?
You got possibilities.
I'm stalling. I don't want to embarrass myself again. Next, please.
Number two, it featured new dialogue by Michael Mayer, who also directed it, and additional songs and orchestration written by Andrew Lippa. Choreography was Jerry Mitchell, and sets by David Gallo, who is Michael Mayer's frequent collaborator. It also featured Kristen Chenoweth and Roger Bart, who each won the Tony Award in their respective category.
Wow.
It has the song Happiness in it. Happiness is...
Oh, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Yep.
Kind of ice cream.
A comic book without a superhero.
Exactly, yes. Yep. And if you
Unless
are...
Unless you count Snoopy.
Right.
Well, yeah, because guys, comic books are a medium. They're not a genre.
So then there's also comic strips.
And this strips. Does include some comic strips, I will say.
Okay. So I'm sorry, I completely glossed over it to just say what I wanted to say. Snoopy's a superhero?
I mean, if anyone in that comic is
a
superhero.
Red Baron.
Yeah, the Red Baron. Top
I love
of camel.
It.
And if you want more on You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, go back and listen to our episode of our live show with BD Wong.
Yay!
Nice. You can go listen to that. Number three. Sarah Jessica Parker was the replacement for the title character of this musical, with music by Charles Strauss, lyrics by Martin Sharnan, book by Thomas Meehan, opened in 1977, and sought to fight the downbeat mood of the Nixon era and the Vietnam War.
Based off of the old style, style comic strip Little Orphan Annie that they then turned into Annie.
Whoa. Okay.
And Sarah Jessica Parker was one of the replacement Annies in that original production.
I had no idea that Annie was based on a comic.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow. Little Orphan Annie. Yeah, it was a radio show as well as a comic.
Yeah, you which and is cool. You know it because they show it in A Christmas Story. So little Ralphie is listening to with his decoder ring, that decoder ring scene. Mm-hmm. He's listening to Little Orphan Annie before the Ovaltine commercial.
I know that movie like the back of my hand.
Yeah,
that's like my Christmas tradition. Even my parents this year were like, "Really, we're gonna watch this again while opening presents?" I was like, "Yes, we are. Of course." Okay, number four, Broadway production directed and choreographed by Michael Kidd. Opened in 1956 at the St. James, and it's about Dogpatch, USA, and its citizens, where the small town learns that it's been declared the most useless place in the country and will be used as an atomic test bomb site unless they can prove their worth.
This sounds like the most fun show ever.
It is.
I wish I knew
and
it was.
And no one does it. What is it, Jimmy?
It's The Incredible Hulk, the musical.
No, that's wrong. Oh.
Then I don't. It's a radiation testing site. The Incredible Hulk. No?
No.
Okay.
No,
I don't know what it is then.
Lil Abner.
Lil Abner.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Really fun musical that no one does, but it's a great one.
My goodness.
This show is a series of self-contained vignettes, premiered in 1975 in San Francisco, and it featured Dom Potter, Jimmy Dodge, and Pamela Myers of Company fame, and the characters are from the Charles M. Schulz comic strip Peanuts. So think You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, but this show came afterwards about its superhero character.
Snoopy?
Uh-huh. That's it?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
I have to contest.
Oh, okay.
Because it's Snoopy with an exclamation point, so it would be Snoopy! Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I kind of said it with a question mark.
Awesome. Yeah, again, rarely done show, but very good for, like, summer camps and kids
fun.
And stuff like that.
It's it actually has, BD Wong may hate me for this. I'm so sorry, BD. But I think it has a better Linus song in which he waits for the Great Pumpkin.
Oh.
Great Pumpkin.
Pumpkin?
Who waits for the Great Pumpkin?
I'll edit that. Okay. This was the second attempt at an Annie sequel, the first entitled Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenge, that opened at the Kennedy Center to unusually...
Hannigan Smash.
Universally dim reviews.
Hannigan Smash.
This one, on the other hand, was developed at good speed, and it was directed by Martin Sharnan and choreographed by Peter Gennaro. And, yeah. So, Annie's sequel. So, when she's adopted...
Yeah, it's Annie Warbucks.
Annie
Warbucks.
Annie Warbucks.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but I really like... Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenge.
Oh, yeah.
A lot better.
That's a great title.
Right? Whatever happened to that one? Okay. Okay, we have two more. The preferring to eschew the slapstick humor of the popular television show of the 1960s and the three movies in the 90s, the producers of this musical said that their goal was to create a musical that reflected the wit of the cartoons in a 19th century Gothic style.
Oh, the Adams Family.
It's a fun one.
It's a good
also
one.
Also did not know that was based on comics.
Yeah, well, it was based off of not even a comic strip, but just like those single panel
in the New Yorker.
Okay. Yeah, oh, nice. In the New Yorker. Nice. And it was written by is it Charles Adams? It was written by it was called the Adams Family because that was the guy who wrote it and drew it. Awesome. It was Adams.
You know all the comic book things.
I know all the comic book things.
Okay, this one's just going to be for Jimmy because it's crazy, but I also know he's going to get it. This musical has a book and lyrics by Gary Trudeau and music by Elizabeth Swatos. Do I even have to finish it?
Wait.
Doonesbury!
I actually knew that.
Oh, no!
I know the name Gary Trudeau because I actually really like Doonesbury. That's one that I always read in the funny pages. I actually don't know the musical, though, so I probably would have just said Doonesbury and gotten it right, but I wouldn't have said it, like, with confidence.
I'm so sorry. We'll give it to you.
We'll give it to you.
All right, sweet.
Yay, so that's our game.
Yay.
My mom has been actually kind of excited about the games. She likes playing along, and she was very proud of herself. On one of our episodes, we did a wine quiz for Jimmy to kind of see how much he's learned.
Yeah.
And
didn't do that well.
She was proud of herself because she did pretty well.
Yay, Mom.
So yay, Mom.
Good for you.
Yeah. Kevin, where can people find you on social media if they want to follow you?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I'm on Twitter at KevDJJones. And
you are also a professional DJ. You're available for parties and
yes,
bar mitzvahs.
Absolutely, yes.
You are in your Spider-Man mask and costume when you're DJing.
Great, great, man, cool. Let me tell you guys, one of the saddest things about that show is that I couldn't keep the Spidey costume.
Oh.
Every Halloween, I think, man, if I just been able to keep my costume.
This was your favorite comic book character growing up.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And so I'm not contesting you.
No, of course.
I think Young Justice is a better, series. I think that, Tim Drake's Robin is better, but fine. But I mean, how was that? What was that feeling to first get it and then to first don that outfit and then to fly and to be Spider-Man?
It was something else. Like, that was really a life-changing moment. The one unfortunate thing about it was that when I first had my costume fitting, I of course had to have like the harness on and everything, right? So I had the harness on, and I think actually at one point they told me I could take the harness off, but I didn't for whatever reason. But so I'm wearing this harness, I'm standing up let's talk a little bit about these costumes.
Right.
There was the first they give you all like the same, underwear, Under Armour, undershirt, everything. And then on top of that is the muscle suit, just to make all these guys of very different body types sort of look similar to each other.
Right.
You know, we're all different heights, but there are martial artists, gymnasts, dancers, whatever.
Right.
Aerialists. So
how many, just for everybody who doesn't know, i.e. me, how many were there altogether?
9, not including Peter Parker.
That's insane.
Yes.
Love it.
9 of us who at any point put on the Spidey suit.
You had all the stuff on you, the muscle suit.
Right, yeah, anyway. So I'm putting on the muscle suit, and it has like these padded, it's padded, strategically to make all the guys kind of look similarly built, because there were guys who are much, more built than I was, less built than I was. Actually, I was one of the skinnier ones, so my muscles were a little bit more. it's like foam that's sewn into the costume. So there they are, like, kind of slowly standing around me and like carving these little like shapes out of this styrofoam that's attached to me. Meanwhile, I'm wearing this harness. I'm standing up, hadn't eaten anything that day, and that was the closest I've ever come to fainting.
Oh no!
I've never fainted still to this day in my life, but that was the first time I ever had that feeling of like sort of blood rushing from to your face and your head. And I was like, I've never felt this before, and I think this is what it feels like to almost faint. So I'm gonna sit down for a second, and then we're gonna get back to like give some water. Yeah.
It's good that you
got
it.
I think it's something with those harnesses, because, I mean, not in any way comparable to what you did, but I played Peter Pan.
Right.
She also had muscles sculpted for
her.
Yes,
they needed to. but I was in the harness because we teched in Alaska, and we only had 2 days to tech the show, and I had never flown before. Mm-hmm. So they were teaching me and teching at the same time, which was great. It was just fun. But I had been in the harness for, I mean, since 9 a.m. And at this point it's like 9 p.m. and I had maybe had 30 minutes somewhere in there, and I got done with my last flight of the night, and I remember them bringing me down and just crying.
Yeah.
And because everything not only hurt, but I my body didn't feel like my own.
Yeah, it takes some getting used to.
Yeah.
Like, by the time I was done with that show, that it was broken in, it was sort of like fit to my body. I could sleep in it if I needed to. But, like, when it was first turning it on...
And how many times did you? Okay, hook me up, and I'm just going to hang there and take a nap.
The world's most expensive hammock.
So, people can follow you on Twitter.
Yep. Oh, yeah. The thing that we were going to talk about.
Twitter at KevDJJones. Uh-huh. Instagram at BrainFreeze215. Don't judge me. I thought it was clever when I was 12.
For the
I didn't have Instagram when I was 12. 12. This was not Instagram. No, that was like one. That was an early email address.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was your AIM.
Yeah. I think, you know, it. I got that email address when I was in high school, and it had some, like, I don't know. It was like maybe the first day of high school, and I had ice cream and got really bad brain freeze, and I was like,
"Oh, I thought like
that's it."
That's that brain freeze kid. Your engineering thing. I don't know. I was Jedi Jimbo for the longest time. Go. So
anyway, yeah. So that's what my is Instagram.
Your, right, what is your embarrassing childhood email or AIM?
Broadway Star 42.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think it says a lot about a person. Their Broadway, AIM name.
Broadway Star, yeah. Their old AIM name. When it wasn't about just your name, trying to get as close to your name as well, it was probably like your avatar.
You know? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Jimmy, where can people follow you?
They can follow me at Jedi Jimbo on AIM. they can also follow me. Two M's. They can also follow me on Twitter at Jimmy_Robertson and Instagram at Jimmy Robertson.
And I am at JM Humphrey 1 on Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow the show at Tannins and Tunes on Twitter and Instagram. And you can always email us at tannins and tunes@gmail.com. And this month, our review challenge. So if you give us a review on iTunes, we will donate $1 towards the Time's Up campaign for the month of February.
So
get those reviews in.
And as always, we will still pair a wine with your username.
Yep.
And hey, put in your AIM username. We'll pair a wine with that too.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. Right. Please do that. I will have so much fun with that.
Also, not grape juice.
Right.
Also, I want your mom playing in. Guys, if you play in the games with us, tweet us. Tell us how much or email us. Tell us how well you did, how badly you did. tell us.
Got Elsie the cow?
Follow the honor system or just lie.
Or just lie.
Yeah, if you got Elsie the cow, like, rub it in Alex's face.
Right? Let him know.
Tweet at us to tweet at him.
And also, if you're ever interested in the wines that we have here on the show, every week I come up with your tasting notes and I send them out in an email format. It's literally the only email that you'll ever get from me because I'm too lazy. But
it's the best subscription.
It's
ever.
Really fun. And so you'll get more information on the wine and you'll get more information on our guests. I usually try to find some embarrassing video on YouTube of our guest, which is so much fun. Or I'll just put
Did
an embarrassing.
You find one already for...
No, I haven't. I haven't tried yet. So get ready, Kevin. And if I can't find an embarrassing video of our guest, I'll put an embarrassing video of myself up, which is really funny.
Okay.
So get ready for that.
You can probably find a video of Kevin DJing, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Full Spidey get up. Mostly my YouTube is for posting unlisted audition videos to send off to casting agents.
Right.
I think I do have on there a remix that I made of The Room, the movie that Disaster Artist
yes.
is based on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone's ever heard of Pogo, the
like YOLO, you only live once.
No, he's this guy on YouTube who takes movies, mostly like when he was starting out, like Disney animated movies, and just taking little sound clips and bits and bytes and mashing them together to make songs.
Oh, cool.
Very inspired by him, aka just copying straight up what he does. He's awesome. But I made one for the room, and it's terrible and hilarious.
And I will put it on our tasting notes.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa, is in it.
Just a very tiny bit. It has to be musical, you know? It was right. It was hard to get little bits that sound like notes.
That's just
so true.
I think I have like, me apart.
Well, Kevin, thank you.
Can Kevin be with us forever? Yes. He's my new best friend, and we're getting an apartment together.
I was going to say, yes, by all means, keep bragging about how large your New York City apartment is.
Right. Great. Well, we'll talk to you soon, listeners.
Yeah,
keep
bye.
Listening. Bye,
keep
Mom.
Keep listening. Keep drinking.
Bye. I still have